Okay, let's get going. Welcome, everybody. Another beautiful winter day up there. So, let's see what we got here. Does anybody have any final questions about the presentations next Tuesday? I'm going to be talking about a couple of logistical things and a few tips for you a little bit later on. But if you have any specific questions, let me know or email me later on. Nothing new here except individual reflection. Anybody who's worked on a project needs to write up an individual reflection due on the 17th. I know you guys are busy, have a lot of final exams and other things due, and I know that, you know, for the course, you have your final project report and individual reflection due on the 17th. But if you are busy with other things, you can request a 1 or 2 day extension to really get your report in good shape. Rather, you spend a little bit additional time and submit a really good project. So let me know if you are going to be needing more time. That's this slide. Because, you know, Stanford Duck Syndrome, we don't want you to be capsized. Okay. But for people who will still owe me summaries for missed lectures, I want to reiterate this incomplete option. You know, if you find yourself overwhelmed with things in the next couple of weeks, just ask me, request an incomplete, and that'll give you additional time to turn in your summaries. Otherwise, you know, your grade will suffer if you have missed lectures that you haven't submitted makeups for. Any questions on that? Okay, great. So next Tuesday are the final presentations. So next Tuesday is all about these formal presentations, 5 minutes each, very professional. Not much interaction, you know, just you and the audience. But next Thursday, it's going to be totally different. We're going to have everybody bring their projects on Thursday, and we'll show them off to each other, have outside, and have a little bit of food and drink and interaction, lots of time to ask questions, see what the other students have done. So it should be a great way to end the quarter. Okay, and as a part of that, I'm going to have some food, pizza and burritos. I really want to know how much I should buy. So if you haven't signed up for food, please do that. If you have a special dietary requirement, there's space for that as well. Okay. The magic date for me is Tuesday, March 15th. I have to have all grades entered by that time, so I should have all your material from which I grade you at that time, so I can give you a good grade. According to the Stanford policy, you have to request an incomplete by the last class session. So the last class session is next Thursday, so I'll remind you about that as well. Okay? For students, here's some resources for writing. I found this real nice website today, a guy's blog on writing, and there's some other PowerPoint and presentation tips on that I have links to on this course website. Logistics. I want all the teams to send me their PowerPoint presentations by next Tuesday at noon. So I'll have time to make sure that they all work and transfer them to my laptop and get them in order and everything, make sure that they work. I'm going to have a web page which shows you how to use the presenter to advance slides and use the laser pointer. It's not a big thing, but it's good not to fumble around with it, you know, when you're trying to make a presentation. We're going to try to start as promptly as you can, so the people that are going first, please be here on time, and we'll get you ready to go. 5 minutes per team. I'm going to announce you know, who's next, so that the next team can get ready to be up here. And so at the end of the presentation, rather than me calling on you and you getting up and coming down here, you know, be ready. You know, you can stand on the side here, because that'll make things go a lot faster and you'll get out earlier. And so there'll be no questions during the presentations on Tuesday, so save them for Thursday, where you can ask all the questions you want, because it's going to be sort of an open forum. No live demo, save that for the demonstration day next Thursday. If you use notes, rather than having a floppy piece of paper, I suggest you use index cards. That's a lot easier to handle and to read. You know, use big font on that. That'll help out. You need to sort of figure out where to stand. You know, are you going to probably don't want to stand right in the light. You know, that's no good. So figure out where to stand so you have easy access to the audience and you can point. So that's why I stand over here. It's important not to read off the screen or look at the screen too much. So use a laser pointer rather than your finger, because who knows where I'm pointing when I'm doing this. Make sure your slides are readable, not too much text on the slide, nice high contrast. Show your prototypes. Take a picture of your prototypes in detail. Show them in your slides. It's a very good way of describing what you've done. So this is pretty important. We want to have you go through your entire process, but focusing on what you've achieved. So I want you to tell the whole story of your project. You don't have to emphasize the problem or the brainstorming as much. Talk about you know, what you've done and how you've achieved your goal. Again, practice makes perfect. Make sure you practice it. Every time you practice, it's going to be better. So you need to practice, make sure you have it makes sense, you know what's coming up, know what slides are next, what to say, and how to hand over the presenter from one person to the other. Okay? And, of course, timing. I'll bring my five-minute timer. Please dress professionally, because, as you remember, on Tuesday, you're not going to be a student. You're going to be a professional giving a professional presentation. Okay, so you need to address the part. In your presentation and your report, please address future plans, even though you don't have any future plans. But imagine you had another quarter or something to work on it. You know, what would you do? What would be the challenges that you would take up? And, of course, invite other people, significant others, people you've bothered all year by working on your project, your roommate or whatever, and anybody who has contributed to your project, please invite them. For people in the community, I want to emphasize that these projects were 8-week student projects. They're meant to be prototypes. They're not market ready, so don't judge them that way. Some of the devices are made to be a custom solution for a particular individual. So again, they're not going to be on the market. So again, that's the way to judge them. So if you're still working on your project, that's fine. You don't have to bring it on Tuesday. You have to talk about it on Tuesday, but you know that'll give you. We want to see your project on Thursday. Not necessarily on Tuesday. So maybe it gives you a little bit more time to work on it. The important thing is in your presentation not to be apologetic about what you didn't achieve. Always be positive, confident. Emphasize the positive. One more time, during the break, if you haven't done so already, sign up for food for next Thursday. We'll have a good time. And I have it on good authority. There'll be ice cream as well. Okay, so plan for that. So here's the lineup of presenters. What we did on Tuesday is sort of swap the order for the teams from the midterms, and so I think that is fair. So we'll get through all of these on next Tuesday. So today, have the pleasure for the, I don't know, how many years have you been doing this? Oh, okay. There'll be some interesting projects. These titles really don't tell the whole story, the project you'll hear. Yeah. So we're going to, I'll record the audio for next week's presentations. Okay? So how many years have you been doing this, Ralph? Maybe about... No, with me in my classroom.
He was just a kid.
Yeah. No, I've only done it 8 years, and I don't think I had you the first couple years. Okay. You've been doing this a long time, so if you're ever in on the show Jeopardy, and the answer is the first AutoCAD user, the answer is, who is Ralph Hotchkiss? Okay.
I still have the disc with those two on the one.
So you have a pioneer in many respects here. And so we'll take a little break as usual. Come in and sign up if you haven't. And we'll get Ralph's slides loaded and ready to go.
Before you do that, let me ask some questions about the projects, if you don't mind.
Switch to the audio.
Oh, we could do that right away if you want, or...
No,
that's
fine.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really easy project. So you get this.
Oh, my. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Position.
So let's give Ralph a warm Stanford welcome.
Okay. So first a few questions. Who's doing customize your wheelchair? Two projects. Three. And what are the specific projects, tasks, or are you working together?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm working on some things so that you can have access to, different designs for beds. And so I've taken it for it, and I'm working on a single clamp for you to see your wheelchair so that you can, shop for it.
Okay. 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 There's somebody, a woman, making hand-sewn wheelchair purses They're quite nice. I'm not quite sure how to reach her, but it's on the web. And your first one was, you said, the first thing you said was something I didn't understand.
The first thing that I'm doing is, bring out my hands down a little bit, her back. Right. And then, automatically, they would be manufactured. And I'm doing one specifically for a friend of mine who
okay. Okay, great.
And the other was sort of a spin-off of that, where if you have to do more, you can find it.
Okay. And yours? Okay, larger grab area, or?
Behind that.
Oh, behind, okay. So, like the protective plate. Okay. Yeah, important for basketball. I used to lose a lot of spokes. Huh. And yours? Okay. I'm deeply involved in backrest problems myself right now. It's a tough area to get it adjustable for a good posture as well as easy to put insignia on and other things. Great. And who's doing Pimp Your Ride? Yes, here. Okay. So you're the... Great. Another question. Among all of you, what languages are spoken? English, clearly. And what others? Yes. Spanish, Espanol. Okay. And how many others with... can function in Spanish? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7.5, 8. Great. And other languages? French, Francais. Which? Okay, both. Okay, great. Others? Hindi. Okay. Okay, shukriya ji. And you?
Italiano.
Okay. Yes? Swahili. Nakupenda sana. And anybody else? Yes. Japanese. Arigato. Any others? So... this is about the broadest spectrum we've had in any of these classes, I think. And because we're talking about both assistive technology and appropriate technology, appropriate to all countries at the same time, I'm always curious who has what connections to other cultures and other countries. And knowing the language, of course, is the first big step that every one of us can take with any language. Right now I'm enrolled in a Mandarin course, and boy, I'm working hard. It's a task. Probably just as hard as English is. So, let's see. Let me move this back a little. So, yeah, go ahead with the movie. It's a very short video.
Disabilities every day, and we knew already there was a
greatest shortage of wheelchairs in Haiti.
Ralph Hotchkiss rides his own wheelchair around the campus of San Francisco State University, where for 22 years he has run a nonprofit that develops sturdy, low-cost wheelchairs for underdeveloped nations and arranges for their distribution. With estimates of more than 2,000 amputations in Haiti, Hotchkiss's contacts there in the disabled community let him know immediately that thousands of patients would be needing the kind of chair he and his colleagues at Worldwind Wheelchair International have built and improved and distributed around the world.
We're having, so far, 350 chairs made in Vietnam and Mexico, and all sent to Haiti to be distributed to people both with spinal cord injuries and with amputations, usually dual amputations, who absolutely have to get mobility soon before it's too late.
What they'll be getting, courtesy of non-governmental organizations, are wheelchairs priced at about $200, manufactured in small independent factories around the world. Those chairs are designed in this mechanical engineering lab in San Francisco, which is where Hotchkiss and his staff teach design and construction.
What we're going to start out with tonight is hand-rim bending.
Hotchkiss got involved 44 years ago after he was paralyzed in a motorcycle accident. He learned fast that wheelchairs, even ones that cost several thousand dollars, weren't very practical.
My first wheelchair lasted me half a block, and the front wheel was then ripped off by hitting a crack in the sidewalk. It was beyond repair.
As an engineer, he began studying and observing wheelchairs.
We started at the end of 1979 in Nicaragua. I met some young fellows who were sharing one wheelchair. I was riding a homemade, fairly high-tech chair at the time. They looked at my chair and said, well, we know it's going to break in a couple of places, and I knew they were right.
He got some funding to do research, started working by hand, putting together parts like bicycle tires to make the chairs stable, more durable, and more useful in the rough terrain that is so prevalent in third world nations. His latest model, the Rough Rider, is in use in many poor countries, and in fact, 50,000 Worldwind wheelchairs have been bought over the years by nonprofit groups and then given away.
Amen.
Hotchkiss and his staff test the theories on hills and in flower beds near the College Science Building.
There are parts of it that require the same skills that are required to go over unpaved roads and up and down rugged trails. Our chairs have a much longer length between the front and rear wheels than typical chairs. We adjust the footrest behind the front wheels instead of hanging them way out front like a cow catcher. We've also gone to mountain bike rear tires, and thank goodness those are more and more available all over the world. And there's no way you can break it. It's got a bicycle hub in the middle, very cheap, very available.
Worldwind wheelchairs are easily repaired and modified, key elements of the poor nations. Hotchkiss insists that everyone in his class and on his staff, and most are not disabled, ride a wheelchair. Laura Hunt is a senior majoring in anthropology.
It definitely made me realize that accessibility is a completely different world. Unless you are in a wheelchair and get first-hand experience, you don't often think of the small things, like being able to get the napkins in the dining center, or finding a fork, or how steep the grade in the hill is on this campus.
For his role in raising awareness of the needs of the disabled and for his efforts to fill those needs, Hotchkiss was awarded a MacArthur Genius Grant. His concern is worldwide, and he says that Haiti's need for wheelchairs is hardly unique.
There are easily 25 million people in the developing world who need a wheelchair today and don't have one.
25 million?
And not only do they need a wheelchair, but they need the best of wheelchairs because they have the worst of terrain. And they go the longest distances. No cars, no buses would lift. They have to go miles to get to work, to school.
As Hotchkiss and his crew work to get Rough Riders to Haiti and other third world nations, they are also looking to bring durable, inexpensive wheelchairs made in Vietnam and Mexico to the United States at a cost disabled Americans can afford, well below what they pay today.
So, that... Okay, that news report started out with one of the biggest, most common misconceptions about not only the project that I work in, but a lot of the best development work in appropriate technology. They said we were designing wheelchairs for use in the developing world. That's 180 degrees different from what the main emphasis of our project is. And that's to steal good ideas from the third world so that we can have better wheelchairs here. I had worked, when this project started, 34 years ago, I had already ridden a chair 14 years in the U.S. mostly, and in Europe, developed countries. And I had not found anybody working on everyday chairs and making significant progress in making chairs better. There was a worldwide monopoly during those years of wheelchairs. There had been, that monopoly lasted from 1950 to 1980, and during that period, progress measurably went backwards and prices went up. That's what monopolies do. And at the same time, though, in developing countries, people were building their own chairs. They were taking broken chairs or thrown away chairs from the north, remodeling them as they broke down. This group of boys I met in Nicaragua that started my project, they were sharing a chair, four kids sharing one chair, and it had 20 fractures in the frame already. It was an American chair, a kind of a typical wheelchair, the box shape, very unstable, very hard to deal with, hard to push with. And it had broken down, like the first one I had ridden had broken down in a mere half block. And they had taken it to a neighborhood blacksmith. And the blacksmith looked at the fracture and said, well, obviously it should have fractured. It was underdesigned. It wasn't made right. And they worked together and reinforced it, remodeled the, pushed the steel around a bit and put more steel where it was needed, shaved off steel where it wasn't needed, making the chair stronger but no heavier. Then they reinforced the other side of the chair, the same part, so that the other side wouldn't break either. And eventually the chair had fractured in 10 different spots, and for every one of those repairs, they repaired both sides of the chair. So 20 welded parts, everyone reinforced on that chair. And they had a pretty good chair when they were done, but they knew they could go a lot further. They did look at my homemade chair at the time, which was a fancy four-wheel drive, manually propelled folding chair. This is 1979, and they predicted that it was going to fail. They were right. I already knew that it was failing in a few spots. They wanted to work with me together, if possible, and build chairs for all four of them and a few of their friends. That developed into now five different shops in Nicaragua that have built chairs over time. There have been thousands of locally made chairs and a steady flow of ideas out of Nicaragua to other parts of Central America and around the world. And finally, these days, a little bit of trickle-up, or they call it tinkle-up, to the developed world, the overdeveloped world, making chairs better in this country as well. The most interesting to me and most critical part of that new technology is our front wheel. Here are a couple of different sizes, kids and adults. These front wheels are called Zimbabwe wheels because they were invented in Zimbabwe about 30 years ago in a large size, 14-inch diameter, for push carts, to replace the imported pneumatic tires that only lasted them, say, a year with several flats along the way. They came up with a wheel that cost much less, that was locally moldable in a very simple sandwich mold, not the many part mold that the American ones were made with. And they would last for years, of course, with never a flat. We stole the idea immediately, made it in first an 8-inch, then 7-inch, then 6-inch, then 3.5, then 4 1/3-inch, different sizes. We eventually realized that these were the best compromises because this new Zimbabwe design, being so wide, it followed the rule given in an 1898 American book about automobile design, where they gave them a mathematical formula showing how much smaller you could make it for every bit of extra width you add. If you compare old car tires, they're like motorcycle tires, but very large. Wooden spokes, metal spokes. Now they're much smaller and much wider. Because they're wider, they don't fall in the holes so much. They kind of average the lumps and holes in the highway better. Yes. We never found the inventor of the Zimbabwe wheel, but at least we named it Zimbabwe, and I don't know what else we can do, honestly. When and if we find something that somebody has rights to, we're real happy to pay royalties. But most things in developing countries are not patented, so we get it for free. The other part of it is we steal it, but we give it back as best we can as well, because we want more people involved in our ring of our network of inventors. The bigger our group is, we've had shares made in 40 countries now, and there are hundreds of writer, inventor, blacksmith, people with all of these skills who are plowing back. So it works. I don't feel any jealousy over that. Yeah, people are proud to see their genius used. So let's see, let me try turning these on. So we started in 1979, 1980, Nicaragua. And here's one of the people who started our group in Nicaragua. She was a seamstress and became a welder, and taught the rest of us how to handle the stresses on fabric. She was used to working with heavy canvas, making horse carriers and things like that, and tents or sun shelters. And our first experiments with fabric backs were just as bad as the ones made in America. They lasted less than a year. They would rip out if you hit them hard. And we've got it to the point now that they're very good. In fact, the seat I'm sitting on right now has 8 automobile seat belts sewn into it. And so to rip apart my seat takes 45,000 pounds. That's way more than I can apply by jumping into the seat. But on the other hand, especially when somebody over 6 feet tall sits down hard into a chair, and people with disabilities, if they can walk, they tend to sit down hard. Likely only hits the front seat belt, so all their weight goes on that seat belt, and because it's strung taut, it multiplies the tension by a large factor. So, and we don't just want it not to rip apart. It has to not stretch. If the seat stretches, the seat goes down. The chair gets a little wider, and the seat gets a little lower. It doesn't fit anymore. We like chairs that fit like a glove, with the wheels right under your shoulders, as close as possible, with an angle to the wheels that puts the hand rim right in line with your shoulder. And that, by the way, interesting side story, was invented in mid-70s by two women who were wheelchair racers. They radically cambered their wheels, put the handles right in line with the middle of their shoulders. Most all the chairs then were originally manufactured with straight up and down wheels, and we were required to use the wheelchairs of the monopolists in order to enter the sports events at that time. But when they cambered their wheels, they beat most of the men. They set a whole new set of records. And of course, the next year the men cambered as well. And within a few years, everybody had modified their chairs. It set off a whole wave of new invention. And ever since then, there hasn't been much difference between the winning times of the men and the women, the records. Before that time, before that one change, there were big differences between men's records and women's records. That's a very nice example of the problems are technical. A lot of the problems are just simple arithmetic or simple geometrics and ergonomics. And a lot of progress can be made, is yet to be made. I mean, wheelchairs maybe are catching up to the bicycle of 100 years ago, but they have a little ways to go. Up. Here's Kenya. Notice the fellow on the front. He's the smallest of the three of us, but he's got the biggest wheels. That's because he lived way out in Meru, way up in on the edge of the desert in central Kenya. And he could only buy 28-inch wheels for replacement. That's all that was available in his village. So that's what he built his chair with. He had almost died of pressure sores for lack of good medical care, or lack of preventive medical care was what he really needed most. And here he is at age 15. He had been injured in third grade, had not been allowed in school at all since third grade. But the woman following him is one of Kenya's leading disability rights advocates. We're on the way to his school where Thelma, where the woman told the principal that new laws had been passed. And she quoted right from the Americans with Disabilities Act and said that he would be censured under those new regulations if he didn't admit this child immediately. And he got into school, went right into third grade, and within a year he was in high school. So I need to get back in touch. I wonder how he's doing. Yeah, so we have three sizes of wheel there. The woman lives in Nairobi, where she can get 26, but not so easily 24-inch wheels. Now, that was a few years back. 24 are now available, but at that time she could only get 26 or 28. The kid could only get 28. So he has 28, she has 26, and I have 24. 24 is the optimum size, especially for fitting in buses and yes. These are pneumatic. Those are all pneumatic. Well, first the tires aren't available, non-pneumatic tires. You can only buy them in here.
But I assume you could cast them there, right? Is that like a European thing?
Cast them there. Possibly. But it's a whole lot easier to go buy tires if you're a little shop trying to make chairs. Maybe for some of the bigger wheelchair shops in developing countries, as the market has grown over the last 30 years, they are beginning to cast in a few places. Zimbabwe is one. South Africa is another. They're casting locally, and so people can get spares. And it's great for maintenance, but it's not so good for covering ground efficiently over gravel and rocks. Yeah, so everything is a trade-off in that case. We've done a lot of measurements of some of the available cast solid tires in this country, and the best that we found has a 15% lower coasting distance on a standard track with a standard starting ramp of a half decent pneumatic. Haven't been equaled yet with live rubber. These of course are solid rubber, but they're only a centimeter thick at the middle, and they have to have good bounce. Now there's great rubber. Look at how this bounces. Good sign of rubber. Not only that will roll efficiently, because it'll spring back off after it compresses, but it'll last a lot longer. The springier rubber, not always, but usually, has a better abrasion resistance as well. These are made out of auto tire retread rubber. Let me pass these around. Small one, large one. And in the middle we put a standard bicycle hub. The ones on my chair have a bicycle hub that's available worldwide for $1, including the ball bearings and the axle. That's the retail price, almost all over the world. Wholesale, about 70 or 80 cents.
For
this hub. Yeah, my back hub is more expensive. Wholesale is $3 for this one with bearings.
That has bearings as well?
This is a standard bicycle hub, so it's out of the front wheel of a bicycle. And it's highly competitive, so low price. And huge volumes in most of the world. Much higher in developing countries than here. A lot of our ideas came from the Philippines. Our project started in beginning of 80. In 81, I went to the Philippines. One of the Nicaraguan, those four boys, went to the Philippines as well on a different trip. Both of us worked in a shop that had been established 5 years earlier by wheelchair riders in the Philippines, and they had built already thousands of chairs. And their typical price was under $200. Today the price of a pretty good American chair is $2,000 and up. So they can get pretty much equivalent quality and greater strength at one tenth the price. Yes.
Are you allowed to sell those?
We've started bringing in a few. The FDA has approved them. And they're cheaper here, but not $200.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, but considerably cheaper. We charge about 40% of the price of equivalent chairs so far. Now here's a typical chair in India, made by the Indian government wheelchair factory in Kanpur. I worked with them 26 years ago, tried to get things, help them get going with a little bit newer technology, but it was like beating my head against a brick wall. They were run by retired military folks mostly. That's how their factory was established. And there was very, very little knowledge of wheelchair riding among their 400 employees. There were two guys who rode wheelchairs among their employees, who rode the chair I made for them in 1988 and shot all over the factory at great speed, took air, showed what a half-decent chair could do that their chairs could never do, like this one, but couldn't get the management to budge. Yeah. We've had all different levels of technology mixed in our project, ranging from little shops with only one person to shops as big as 100 employees or more with hundreds of thousands of dollars in tooling for the range of chairs, including ours. Good jigs and fixtures makes it more efficient. But what we found is that the most important aspect of efficiency has little to do with operating capital, has more to do with thinking ahead and being very careful in running a business and having a very, very good design that's appropriate for the terrain and doesn't break down. Yeah, here are some of our bigger shops, the ones that now can make so many chairs they can fill a container, 300 chairs in a container, or now 600 chairs, 600 disassembled chairs in a container. They found a way to cut the shipping cost in half and to employ little shops in other countries, assembling and then repairing. There's our latest chair, same one I'm riding. Sure. Yeah. Any specific question? I was going to say Tbilisi or where? Yeah. Okay. No. Yeah. And our chairs are getting heavier, more complex, a little bit more expensive. Still $200 or less in most places, but they've come up since 30 years ago in a lot of ways. There are now good international wheelchair standards. Chairs have to pass tests that are darn tough. They put a steel dummy in the chair, much less flexible than the human body, and thus rougher on the chair. That dummy has to weigh 220, 250 pounds, 100 kilograms or more. And they put it on a treadmill with bumps and they run it over 200,000 cycles. We now have that same equipment at San Francisco State. We run our chairs 400,000 cycles to give a little bit of safety margin. And we haven't had a failure in years. But making sure that we had that extra safety margin cost us a few pounds, made our chair a little heavier. Well, that's okay. It means any weight of person can ride it safely, pretty much up to 115 kilograms, 250 pounds. And the chair is also much more adjustable than it used to be in order to kind of accommodate the needs of the bigger manufacturers. Before, our chairs were made basically in tailor shops. The user would come and they would measure the user, they would measure the tubing. Now we have to have standard models, minimum number of standard models to fit the maximum percentage of people with disabilities. It's a whole different game to play. And, well, it's not as much fun, but it gets more chairs out. Yes?
As you've begun to centralize manufacturing, mm-hmm. they're sort of switching out some of the materials that I'm sure still do, but previously, more importantly, let themselves to manufacture, like steel for aluminum?
Aluminum is not repairable in 80% of the world. That's the problem. We want a chair that will go anywhere. And there's not welding equipment. So if the chair falls off the roof of the bus, happens, and you need to have a part custom made, if it's steel, they can make it while you wait pretty much in any village anywhere in the world. No. It's the repairability is a big problem. We love bicycle parts. This chair is all standard tubing, which is mostly made for restaurant tables and chairs. That industry has grown around the world. When we started, it wasn't available in some places, but now it is. But we are doing exactly what you said as new materials become available. We really can't think of importing much. Our volume is too small to justify to make it cost effective. But chromolybdenum tubing, typically three times as strong as this is just mild steel, which is the same material of the chairs that you're sitting on in this room, and these tables, the cheapest steel. 30,000 pounds per square inch yield strength, the stress at which it stays bent. Chrome moly, 90,000, bend in it can be 120,000 from just the cold working of making a single bend, which means we can have much thinner walls. We can't cut the weight by a factor of three, unfortunately, because thinner walls are really hard to bend, hard to weld, and are not available. But we can knock a third off the weight, say, of the frame. Go from 1.2 millimeters wall thickness of these tubing diameters down to 0.8 or 0.9, whatever is available. And we're trying it, yes. And that's all repairable everywhere because it's steel. And they can repair it with mild steel if that's what they have. No big deal, yes.
How much does the chair weigh?
This chair weighs 45 pounds. My first chair, the one that I broke in 1966, half a block after I started down the street in Chicago, weighed 50 pounds. That was the old standard weight of a chair. We've got a little less tubing on this one. Heavier wheels, though, because we've gone to big fat tires and heavier rims and so forth. Yeah, everything's a compromise, and I'm trying to get it down, and I always have. When our chairs were 30 years ago, our chairs weighed 36 pounds. They were great. An aluminum chair for 2,000 plus in the United States typically weighs 32 pounds if it's a folding chair, a little less if it's rigid. But one with all the features this has, and this has an X brace underneath, folding frame, folding footrests. It's an all-purpose chair. It'll fit in the aisle of a bus, and that was a no-brainer as far as criteria for the people in Central America who first made these chairs, and the ones in the Philippines as well, because they had to squeeze the chair into public transit. In most of the world, in fact, Africa, and much of Asia, the small town public transit are modified vans, sometimes big shared taxis, but most often a modified van. If you have a rigid chair, a big full-size American rigid chair, you pay triple to go home and visit granny. And a lot of people with disabilities have come to the bigger cities to get in school and to get a job other than agricultural work, but they still have to go home at least twice a year, or they can't, you know, granny won't allow them to go, to leave if she doesn't know they're coming back. And paying triple for that trip is just out of the question. And in most places, if you have a folding chair, there's no charge for the chair. You don't pay for two extra seats. They fold it up, they open the back door, they slide it under the back seats, and away you go. Yeah, so many issues. We're working real hard on rust, and if anybody knows corrosion protection well, please talk to me. We're having some rust problems with our footrests in salty areas especially, and anywhere where the monsoon season just goes for several months straight. The paint gets chipped off, the water creeps in, and mild steel rusts. We're using pretty good primer most places and pretty good paint. Some places powder coating, other places enamel. But we're having some rust problems and always have. But as we get out into more salty areas like Pacific Islands, like Siberia, a lot of salt in the winter time. Yes.
Did you try like a sacrificial anode, like an outboard motor?
Don't know about it. Talk to me later, please. Yeah. Well, now we've changed the design somewhat to fit more in a container. Again, 600 chairs in a container now, if it's disassembled. 300 if it's one box per chair. Yeah, Cali Columbia, one of our stronger inventor groups. The groups that are disability driven, that are disabled folks getting together and starting it, running it, they're the ones where the good inventions tend to come from. The biggest shops tend to be just wheelchair manufacturers who take a design from somewhere else, didn't invent it themselves, don't have wheelchair experience in-house at all in some cases. Very frustrating to work in. But as long as we keep others to feed in new ideas and to react to what comes out of the big factories, at least things are pretty good. There's a lot of social activism involved in the disability movement, where everywhere where there's upheaval, there's opportunity. And disabled folks tend to push their way into public schools, into public transportation, into access to housing and jobs, making huge changes whenever there is any kind of upheaval. And yeah, Nicaragua and 30 years ago, and Russia 20 years ago, there in both cases, and in many others, there have been flurries of social activism that have caused permanent changes. Here's Bolivia. Just three years ago. No más promesas políticas. The people with disabilities had heard promises for their whole lives. None of them coming true, or most of them not coming true. Promises of things as basic as the ability to go to school and get a job. An example of a pretty big political change here. I heard a good quote just a couple days ago that the liberals always win. That sure, there's always push and pull between the liberals and the conservatives, as if there's a big gray area between, and people are liberal in some ways and conservative in others. But if you look at history, now we have women voting. Now we have so many big basic changes in just the last 100 years have happened, and recycling is one of them. It's a fairly non-controversial one, but it's a big change in how we live and how we work. Yeah, Uganda. The woman on the right set up a wheelchair factory there, still working, not making as many wheelchairs, more assembling and repairing now, because there are bigger shops in Nairobi and in South Africa that she can buy parts from cheaper than she can make them. But out of her shop has come all kinds of social change. When I first worked there, two of her employees would carry their babies to work, one on her back of one of the women and one on her teeth as she crawled. And what had changed when she got her mobility, got some job training, and then she went out to a higher paying job, better than wheelchair making. Yeah, Haiti, big changes in Haiti happening in the disability community ever since the earthquake. So, a few other aspects of the chair: the camber, the folding, the pretty good strength to weight ratio, as good as we can design it. And we've gone through many iterations, and we try and break it. I mean, that's my job. I try and break every chair from every manufacturer. So I'm switching chairs regularly and running them into curbs, trying to, for example, climb in curb, you charge, pop a wheelie at the last minute, and then you slam up the curb. But The better you do it, the faster you do that, the more likely you are to occasionally hit the curb solid. Stop yourself cold. On a regular chair, more upright, no backward angle, people fall out. And a very short wheelbase. This is a 50% longer wheelbase in a 6-inch shorter chair than typical. So we've got a half a foot longer wheelbase and a half a foot shorter chair. By the Zimbabwe invention of making a wheel that can go under your feet without raising your knees, and with that kind of stability, yes, you can hit things much harder, but that means the chair has to be that much stronger. And so we not only do lab tests, but we have people in some countries who can break things much faster than I can. And we give them sample chairs and say, here, I'll give you 6 months with this. And if you can bust it, I'll give you two at the end of 6 months. Two better chairs. Anyway.
Any other questions for Ralph?
Yeah, any more? Yes.
What is the lifetime of the chair?
I was just in January in Nicaragua and was helping people repair their chairs going as far back as 1985 was the oldest one that came in. So that's going on 30 years. But most don't last that long. By the time they've gone typically 10, 15 years, if they haven't repainted them, then like a bicycle, they'll start to fall apart. And the person who had gotten their chair to go way back to, since almost 30 years was somebody who really understood steel well and had scraped it and sanded it and primed it and painted it. Every 5 years, she said, whether it needed it or not, just working so hard to keep it running. And I offered it a new chair, but she likes the old model. It's a little bit tighter, fits in her house better, and she can spin faster. Now we've made it stronger and heavier a little bit, so it's not quite as good for dancing.
Ralph, it was great to have you here to wrap up the course, the presenters and stuff. So I encourage people to come down.